That's Gene Harris on piano and the Scott Hamilton Quintet with Scott Hamilton on tenor sax with Blues for Gene. It's from their 1990 album, At Last, with Herb Ellis on guitar, Ray Brown on bass, Harold Jones on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrace Lead. And what a day this is. Welcome to chaos. Some more chaos. And why not? You've shown that we have a high tolerance for chaos in this country. So why not test the limits of it? It's been a long time since the people were at the top of the agenda in this country. And today, the U.S. Senate is taking a pivotal vote with Senator John McCain, recently diagnosed with brain cancer, on hand to personally cast his vote. The Senate is expected to decide whether to open formal debate yet again on repealing and replacing Obamacare. You know, this has been going on for some time. House Republicans have tried more than 50 times to tinker with or to torpedo completely Obamacare since it went into effect in 2009. But now things are different. President Chaos himself, Donald Trump, is behind it, resolutely behind it. And predominantly Republican-controlled state legislatures backing the repeal and replace demand, because now the incentive is to really go full force at it, since all three levels of government are in Republican hands. So the Republicans now in Congress feel a bit more bold about trying to get this piece of work done. Democrats, as you know, have beaten back Republican efforts every time they tried it, the major efforts that they have made to amend or to do away completely with Obamacare. The Democrats so far have been able to beat them back. And they believe it is a historic accomplishment for the party, so all the more so they're determined this time to put up a heck of a fight. They, in fact, the Republicans do not have a single Democratic vote going into the vote today. But here's something that is interesting to me. It's not really too surprising that the Republicans are again trying to do this piece of work. But what is interesting is that even as they attempt a vote this afternoon, not one of them, not even the president himself, is able to produce something called their plan. They don't have a plan. They're hell-bent on repealing and replacing Obamacare. But has anybody produced a plan yet? None of them is able to describe what their plan looks like, because there isn't one. And that's what makes it so American. Yes. Yes. We don't have a plan. You should just trust that we will eventually produce one. And it's secondary, really. The main thing is to defeat this plan, even if we don't have a plan of our own. Just defeat it. To create what? More chaos. Yes. Yes. So you bring this plan, however much you disagree with it, to a screeching halt. You throw people off the plan and leave them to whatever to solve their medical problems. You create all kinds of mayhem and chaos. But that's okay. Eventually, there'll be a plan. And you just have to trust that, you know, a little bit of suffering right now will more than pay off in the end, because what you're going to get, although, yes, we understand, you haven't seen it, so you're a little apprehensive, you're a little testy, but you should trust us. We are Republicans, after all. We know what we're doing. Oh, I tell you, you can't write this stuff. They are going to vote against a plan that, no matter how much they criticize it, it's still working. It's working. Isn't it logical, in a way, to say, well, we really should replace this plan? Let's get beyond whether you should or not. The idea is how you go about things. You should have at least have some way, some thought given to what do people do? You just drop the plan, you kill the plan, you leave them to their own devices until you can get around to putting together your own plan. Now that makes sense, doesn't it? For an advanced country with supposedly very bright people in charge, this makes perfect sense to them. And this is why we have to see, coming through all of this stuff, we have to go beyond it and see how terrible it is that we have only two parties in this country. The unit party, actually, if we have only one, as Charles Rattel says all the time, the unit party. We have only one real party. They both are on board with the same asinine concepts. And in the end, it works for them as long as it works for them. I mean, how do you even begin to have a vote with the intention? And I'm sure, let's say they win this vote today, which gives them the green light to go right at it, repealing and replacing and all of that. You know how much confusion that's going to be already. They couldn't even agree on that, whether they're all on board with repealing and replacing, or are we just going to repeal? Some say we could repeal, but I don't know what we're going to replace it with. Some say replace after we repeal. They don't know what they want to do. They're fumbling and making it look as if they're very confident in what they're doing. What is happening is Donald Trump is barking. We already discussed he is fixated with the ghost of Barack Obama. Anything associated with Barack Obama, he wants gone. He wants it dead. Because he actually, as a matter of fact, as you know, he ran on that theme. You know, we gotta get rid of these horrible things that Obama did. We gotta replace them immediately. Well, okay, you have problems with it. Prove it. Prove it that you have problems with it. And this is widely viewed within the Republican Party or within the American population. No, it's Donald Trump principally having a problem. He's having triplets over anything that bears the name Barack Obama. This, for whatever people see about it, I thought that they went about it the wrong way. And I see a whole different set of reasons to question Obamacare. I've talked about that. but I don't want to rehash it now, but I questioned it when it was going on. Simply because it's the handiwork of the Democratic Party under the leadership of Barack Obama makes no difference, in my view, about the logic of this bill and the myriad questions that pertain to it that never got answered. There's a lot of money, and we still are not clear about the fine details. You see, the devil really does live in the details. But the leadership of the party said, hey, this is great. It's the best thing to come along. This is historic. This is what we've been waiting for. And look, it's done. And we can proceed to give people the help they need. Of course, it's a great idea. Who would argue against health care for people who desperately need it? And that government has a duty to provide it. I mean, that is the thinking in all progressive nations on this planet, big and small. Look, I come from Trinidad, as you know, and since I was a kid till now, you're sick, you go to the hospital, you get patched up, you go back home. No bill. Right? And that's a small country. But it is a small country with a very visionary mindset in this respect. I mean, in other respects, it's a mess. But I'm talking about the recognition by people generally in and outside of government that this is a critical function of government to respond to social needs and to make sure that people are cared for who desperately need care. This is not some grand favor. This should be the thinking of all progressive-minded governments. And we have examples of this all over the world. I pointed to Trinidad because, look, it's a little country, a teeny tiny country that does not have an unlimited budget like the United States seems to have. And yet, this recognition goes way back that when people are ill, somebody has to take care of them. They have to be cared for. That's it. That's part of our consciousness as a nation. Okay. Here you have what seems to be unlimited resources, and the resources are unlimited because, that comes to another subject we've been talking about, the government keeps printing all this money. It prints money like crazy. It has nothing to back it up, which is when this crisis hits, people will get an idea that that's the case. They just print money. And with this printed money, there's this false sense that there's unlimited money. And people are quarreling because they see some people getting money and others are not. And that's because they don't understand that some people are getting real money and others are getting the printed money that they print up every day. The people with the real money are not sharing with the people who get money every day. That is worthless money. They keep the real money. And we're arguing over who gets the money that is printed up every day and sold to us as a very active and thriving economy, the kind that Donald Trump talks about all the time. So when Barack Obama had come close to finishing the deal, sealing the deal on Obamacare, the questions that needed to be asked were not asked. And even when it looked like they were going to be answered, there was always some reason not to answer these questions, like where is the money coming from? Where is the money coming from to achieve all these ambitious goals that you're talking about? Who gets Obamacare? Who does not? These are logical questions. But we never got an appreciation for the fact that in part, in large part, we were sold a bill of goods by Obama. We never were told the truth about Obamacare. The nation never knew that a bunch of people, organized principally by Hillary Clinton and the Clintons and some other operatives in the Democratic Party, just locked themselves away, and she chose selected people to be in this room as they planned and plotted. And this is the sarcastic part, the demonic part, if you want to say it, of Obamacare. The use of a perfectly legitimate need to cover, this is my contention, to cover the fact that people were conspiring in secret to use a perfectly legitimate, necessary, overdue service issue, which is healthcare delivery, to mask the fact that they had concocted a perfect system to make money. You see, and this is my view. This is the objection I had to it in the beginning. Okay, the Democratic Party now recognizes that we should get down to business to discuss health care in the United States. Perfectly legitimate. Absolutely necessary. But we see the process was not at all democratic. The process gave every conscious person reason to question what is going on here. How come all of a sudden there is this overwhelming concern about healthcare? And if so, well, I thought that that was what Congress was for. They would have been the ones to, if there was a need to concoct something of a prototype, will do that. If there was a need to appoint some committee to begin exploration, perfectly legitimate, then do that. But that's not how this was done. Hillary Clinton, who was not appointed to anything, and others that she chose, they were not appointed to do anything. And nobody really knew that they were conducting the business of government in secret. They came up with this plan that is being argued about now is the plan they came up with. And obviously, the incentive was to benefit themselves and people they knew. The same kind of gangsterism and corruption that you see all the time, that we've talked about all the time in connection with the Clinton Foundation. A whole bunch of lawyers, nobody knows where they come from, what their interests are, who they're tied to, people from the insurance world. And guess what? In talking about health care, miraculously, there are no healthcare professionals at the table. We don't even know who was in that room. It's like this thing going on now with this secret meeting with Russian officials. Who is in the room when the discussions are going on about the interests of the Trumps and the interests of the Soviet Union, the interests of Russia? Nobody knows who, you know, it started out as two people in a room. Then it went to three. Then it went to four. Then it went to eight. How many people were in this room? What were they talking about? And that's where my problem with Obamacare started. And that is a legitimate question even now. How did this thing get concocted? And you don't have input and representation by the patient care experts, by administrative experts. You don't have those kinds of people in the room because they're not needed, because this is not about patient care. This is how do we put in the fine print the goodies we want. And then they can proceed, you know, we'll get them to vote on it and say, look, we've saved you the trouble. We've come up with a bill. Just vote yes. And then let's get on with this business. It is about money. That's what we need to understand about this. And Obama still has not come into account for this bill, in which he appeared to have very limited participation. The lead people on this were not assigned to do this by Congress. They don't belong to any congressional committee. They have no power or authority to decide how the people's money is to be spent and allocated. Hillary Clinton was not a representative of government at the time. She was unemployed. She did not get nominated to be a member of the cabinet. She had no credentials in this area, nor did she have authority. Her husband was president at the time, so she figured she was co-president at the very least, and promptly assigned herself a cabinet-level position, which was to take this matter of health care and save Barack Obama and others from the trouble and the annoyance of having to deal with this tedious business of coming up with a health care system. So it was illegal to start with. And then, because they knew this is what these people specialize in, how do you build in the goodies in a budget? You could read a budget 400 times and never spot where the money is hiding, the money that they allocate to themselves. Where is it coming from? It's right there. It's staring you in the face, but you can't find it. You need experts to find it. A line item that looks like, let's say, lab equipment is the piece that's going to some friend. That's how they do this thing. So they come up with this Obamacare. And then when they get some initial resistance to it, they patched it up because it gave them an indication as to where the resistance by the Republicans will be. And then Hillary hands it over. Look, this is done the best of our ability. This is your bill. This is our contribution to you. You don't have to go through the rigors. You know, it's a really testy thing. As you know, it just will never end. It will go through meeting after meeting, vote after vote. Here is a working prototype, and it's pretty solid. And he said, thank you. And then he gets additional direction to just get it done. The real president of the United States, that's Hillary, and Bill, said, just get this thing done. Ram it through the Senate, the Congress, ram it through. Get it done. And so they made elaborate arrangements to do that. The bill was introduced in the dead of night. Nobody was there. They had gone home already when this vote was taken. And what do you know? The big news was that it passed. Well, who was there to vote on it? They arranged it, in fact, to prevent anybody looking over this bill, asking questions. But it by then had become law. You see? So it is not that people like me are opposed to Obama because, hey, it says Obama and we hate Obama. It is that this bill has the stench of official misconduct and corruption attached to it. That's the problem. It is not that people don't like the Democratic Party because Hillary Clinton is there. It is because we're fed up of the Democratic Party denying that it is a corrupt organization. It is an organized crime organization. And you should be ashamed to ask the public who are trying every single day to keep their noses clean to conveniently overcome their standards to support a party that doesn't deserve it. Because the party believes that extolling these people, lifting them up before us as the kind of leadership we need in this country, that we should go along with that. No. No. They're getting this whole thing wrong. So now that, in a way, provides the perfect explanation for the Republicans to now question this bill. Not that they're any different politically. It is just that the shoe is on the Democrats' foot. But it all started out with the initial deception that they would use a very valid situation, such as the need for people to get care, to concoct a kind of criminal enterprise around it and make it hard for politicians to weigh in against it. This was calculated. This was a calculated move by the Democrats, and they got away with it. Now, the general public is not asking these questions, and we should understand how this is perfectly okay, perfectly normal, because the vagabonds calculated even this, that the public will get very annoyed with anybody seeking to question this thing, because at last it has happened, even if it is not perfect, it has happened. Something that they desperately needed, which is access to medical care. It has happened, and they're satisfied that it has happened. They don't want any questions. They don't want any funny stuff happening now. So you see, what looks like a fight over Obamacare and an effort by the Republicans to torpedo it really has a whole different origin. But politics makes it impossible for us to tackle straightforwardly what the big sin is with Obamacare. For political reasons. We can't really come out, not now anyway, with Obama having scored a victory by getting over everybody with this sneaky piece of legislation, in which a lot of people factored themselves in, and they're making a lot of money, which is the whole point of Obamacare. They don't care whether you get medical care for asthma and stroke. They want their piece of the pie. And now that Trump is in office, it's his turn to exact a price. This budget, the budget for health care, is probably second only to the military budget. It is a humongous pie, and no politician likes the pie being divvied out without having a piece of it. That's really what is happening here. If you really sit and think about it, you'll see clearly what this fight is about. So in part, I say Trump is fighting like hell to get this thing repealed and replaced only because Obama got over. They got over. They got not just a piece of the pie, they got the pie. So the other piece of this puzzle is that the people are completely out of this. They are completely out of this one. And no matter what side they pick, it will be the wrong side, because they don't have the necessary information to understand this fight. Because both parties are really shafting us, which brings me to the point of how this fight over healthcare once again illustrates the bad sides, the downsides of the two-party system. You're not going to get the Republicans upbraiding the Democrats over matters of principle and honesty and theft and all of that. They're not going to argue these points because both sides operate this way on practically every big money agenda item. The Republicans cannot cast stones at the Democrats. And the Democrats certainly will not throw stones at anybody because they are walking on thin ice on this one. This, if you started an investigation here, you will find multitudes of Democrats and Republicans alike surfacing. Officially, the Republicans are now saying, well, it's time to repeal and replace, which means, and you translate that, which means it's our time, it's our turn to have a key to the lockbox. That's what it means. So don't go into thinking that they have reason. They can do better. They can come up with better legislation that would end up benefiting the patient. No, it's a very simple thing. All this money is available for grabs. The Democrats got the money first. And now that we have the House, we have the Senate, we have most of the state governments in our hands, we certainly have the White House in our hands, this is the time to grab it. So we will fight over this as if we're talking about making things better for the patients, for our sake. No. They resent the idea that this huge pot of money, and politics is all about money, this huge pot of money continues to be in the wrong hands. And they have an opportunity to reorganize that whole thing, to stop it altogether, to bring the money back into the hands of the powerful Republicans. That's it. This is the whole fight. They can't do anything really to raise the legitimate arguments. So this is how they choose to go about it, telling people, you know, it costs too much. The Republicans don't know what they're doing. They still haven't been able to produce their prototype, all of which is true. I just said that. But the real fight is not being discussed here. Barack Obama was a full-fledged politician in this sense. He got to earn sainthood over this, over going along with the wrong crew doing the wrong thing. But this is a very good lesson, a very good illustration as to what's wrong with a two-party system. The two-party system allows only a binary analysis of anything. Practically any major problem, you could only get two versions of it. It's either A or B. And you're forever being battered between the two. There's no definitive difference between A and B. In the end, their politics are frighteningly similar. What they end up fighting for, in large measure, is their turn to handle huge sums of money that they can dole out to their friends. A good example was when, how many years ago that was, when they were threatening to shut down the government. Well, in the middle of all of that, I think it was it Mitch McConnell? I'm not sure. I don't remember accurately. But miraculously, he came up with a project for a dam. $4 billion. Was it needed? Was the dam even needed? No, but this is how they cement themselves, you know, in memory. He did a spectacular thing and built a dam named after himself. So this is what is going on in the fight for health care, universal health care. It is about these two parties, neither of which is a gift to mankind, fighting among themselves for the spoils and managing to mask their intention, managing to mask the reality of what is going on with these fights. They make a lot of effort to convince people that it is what, in fact, it isn't. Like this vote, you know, this is a really historic vote, and this vote, and we've been hearing about this vote forever. We're not hearing the truth about this whole thing. We're hearing about the vote. So in the minds of the public, and this is carefully choreographed, and you would notice that prior to the vote, Donald Trump has a whole new team of people dedicated specifically to what? Getting the message out. But what is that message exactly? Is the message that you have not yet produced an alternative? Is the message going to be that you have no clue, even now, about what this plan ought to be? No. The message is the Democrats are messing up, and that's why your health care is in jeopardy. Will they ever tell the truth that we want the money? We want the right to control all that money. We want a piece of the action. And this is the best kind of money to have, because this is ongoing money. This is a never-ending stream of money. This is great money to have. No matter who's in office, they won't be able to cut the money. The flow is never-ending. So you can literally provide for your great-grandchildren based on the money you could make on a project like this. This is how it works. I'll give you an example. I experienced this myself. Okay, so you have cancer, and your doctor comes up with an idea to inform you of a very promising new drug. A new therapy is available, and he's highly recommending that I check into this and consider it strongly. Okay. He knows how to talk to me, because he's picked up by now that I ain't a fool. So I said, so what's the bottom line cost here? He says, well, it would average between $15,000 and $20,000 a month. He tells me this. I crack up. I said, oh, really? Because what he's telling me is, if he hooks me in as a patient into this program, well, that's good for a summer home somewhere, a little boat. You know, I could finance his lifestyle. He doesn't know that I know that the pharmaceutical companies basically enroll doctors into their program, their therapies, and they get rewarded. And here's how it works. The doctor is buying chemotherapy and all this other kind of drugs from them at a wholesale rate. They sell it to the patient at a retail rate. They make some money on that. The pharmaceutical company makes money on each patient enrolled in the program. But the doctor would never tell you that he's a salesman for the company. And he is working very diplomatically sometimes. People like me get diplomatic treatment because they know we spell trouble. So they're very gentle and very diplomatic about how they discuss how they want to make money off of you. You are paying all the way. You're paying everybody. But whoever thinks that your doctor is a salesman for the pharmaceutical company and he is buying the drugs wholesale, selling it to you retail. You think the hospital is providing this. No, it's not. It's a doctor. So you could understand why you always have to be on point, because it's always or almost always about a game being run on you. You fit neatly into planned, a plan, a large plan of profitability. And you're not receiving the benefits on any level. You're just the profit motive. You symbolize the boat, the house in the country. That's where you come in as the provider of profit. It happens, of course, and we're experiencing this now, so we will watch this vote today and see what is happening. But I just want to finish up this idea that this vote, in a way, symbolizes what is wrong with the two-party system. You could only get two different views of anything, and you're likely not to get even that if the two sides agree and are acting as the uniparty. What is being fought for here is not improvement of care, not in redefining the government's role in providing care, not in the government's definition of that role, to say we commit ourselves no matter what the political climate, this is a high priority item, and we both commit ourselves to this as a high priority item. That is not what is going on. So until we get a process in which we have a significant other political actor, we will forever be stuck with this stupid binary system. You're either Democrat or you're Republican. I don't want to be either Democrat or Republican. I want to be right. I want things to be right. You both have it wrong. So where does that leave me? Where does that leave a process that requires an entirely different approach? You say yay, and the other one says nay, but nobody changes the subject on which they're voting either yay or nay. Sometimes the votes could be wrong, but sometimes the issue is wrong. And a situation like this, we have both things wrong. We have the people who are wrong, and we have the issue that is wrong, badly framed, incorrect. Where does that leave the masses of people? We do not have, in this scenario, no matter what vote comes down this afternoon, we do not have an independent voice telling the truth about what this is about and guiding us toward some degree of sanity with all of this happening, the hundreds of billions of dollars. And still, people will remain sick. And still, they will be dying needlessly. And still, they would argue there's not enough to go around. This is the bedrock of what it is I'm trying to point out here. We've seen this play out all the time. We're arguing the wrong points. We're chasing the wrong things. And we are falling victim to some silly, corrupt, inept people whose only plan is to advance their own narrow agendas, even if it kills us. When are we going to stop that? It is so self-defeating. It is so clear. We got to get rid of a two-party system. Or we have to build, and or we have to build other movements that could successfully intervene, or that could have the kind of leverage to change the whole focus of this and to really get the people to see what is going on. But they too sometimes are in on the game. We had the recent, in the 2016 election, we had the Green Party carrying out Hillary Clinton's agenda for a recount. And still they're denying it. They're still denying it. That is no business of yours. Your business is to build a party. And don't try to pull wool over people's eyes to say, well, you know, I'm just doing this in the interest of voting, the integrity, to protect the integrity of the vote. You're taking some new drugs that have completely messed with your head. So look at the vote this afternoon with an eye, a very critical eye. Keep in mind that the issue really, for us, the issue really isn't about health care, because that's a stupid argument. It's a non-argument. It's a non-starter. Who in their right mind would find it appropriate to argue whether people deserve health care? It's a stupid argument, so don't even attempt that. Look at how this whole thing was carefully choreographed to achieve nefarious goals, and on the back and on the strength of suffering people. And then they further invested, after they did their dirty deeds, they further invested in campaigns to persuade us that the intent of all of this was our well-being. This fight that they have been having for 8 years was all about our well-being. We're that stupid, you think, to believe that? But they engaged in this war for almost 8 years now. And to this day, as this vote is being taken this afternoon, there is no real document that the Republicans can produce to say, here, this was our original vision. They don't have one. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk some more about this. I took up the whole hour because it needed to be said, so that when we talk, you have a point of reference and we can butt heads as required in our conversations. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. A pleasure always and a great privilege, I mean that, to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.